All right, time to talk sleepers. Good late-round value, maybe mid-round value that could win you fantasy in 2015. Adam Azer, Scott White, now Melchior. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening, Adam.
I guess it is evening.
Yeah, we're doing it a little bit later in the day on this Thursday, January 29th. We just finished up a 23-round Roto mock draft. The results will be available on the website pretty soon. I like my team. How'd you guys feel about yours?
I don't like it very much, but I don't think I ever like my team when I pick 12.
Oh, yeah. You had to reach.
I'm not sure about my team yet either. I'll have to compare it to the others. I don't feel as thrilled with it as I did the head-to-head league team, but I have a feeling that's because I went heavier on hitting, and we were talking after the head-to-head draft that, you know, hitting's not as reliable this year, so maybe I just feel like I have a lot of unreliable picks, but everybody's team is like that, you know?
I want to mention... Yeah, go ahead, Scott.
I just said I'll have to see.
I want to mention one thing before we get into the show. I know there have been some audio issues that you listeners have made me aware of. Don't worry, I am aware of them. We're working through some audio issues now. Hopefully this one sounds a lot better than yesterday's podcast. I hope they're going to get better and better, and hopefully by next week we'll have everything down perfectly. We're just kind of adjusting to a new setup here, so please be patient, and we appreciate it. And I want to say, not exactly a sleeper, more of a breakout, but in Roto, I love Billy Hamilton. I think I took him in the fifth round, and I think he's going to have an amazing year. I read one of those like off-season fluff articles about how he's going to put two halves together and be good for a full season, and I was like, sure, I'll buy it, and now I'm really into it.
I'm convinced.
Well, he was great last year in Roto. I mean, he was top 20 outfielder, so.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, you plug that. It's different from head-to-head where you know exactly what a guy contributes because it's just a point total, and you know, he gives you this many points and that's how much he's worth. In Roto, you're just plugging five different competitions into one formula and weighing them and deciding, okay, this is what he's worth. Well, he's really just a one-trick pony with this
runs.
No, not really. He scored 72 last year.
A terrible, terrible year. If their lineup rebounds, he'll score 90.
I think he...
What? Well, he didn't get a base.
Yeah, for where you're drafting him, I think the runs are just going to be on par with some of the middle of the order hitters you could draft there. So, I don't know. I mean, yeah, great. He helps you solve steals, but...
Not solve steals. Like, dominate steals. And he ranked ahead of Yasiel Puig last year in Roto, FYI.
Well, according to that formula that I don't really trust, I mean, honestly, who's taking Hamilton ahead of Yasiel Puig? Nobody, and nobody should, because steals is just one category. So it doesn't matter how much he dominates in that one category, he's not as valuable as somebody who's going to contribute and potentially dominate in multiple categories.
You know, I think it's all how you construct your team. You know, certainly you would rather have somebody that's going to help you in more categories. But I think fifth round was pretty good value based on what I expect him to do this year.
Well, listen, we'll break down that draft on another podcast, Al, and we'll talk about breakouts on another podcast, and we'll talk about sleepers again later on during spring training after we do our position previews and throughout our position previews. But right now, I just want to take an early look, put some names on people's radars. I have six sleepers from each of you, some emails to get to as well at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. You got to put baseball podcast in the subject line and put baseball podcast in there and send it to fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. And let's start with email of the day number one from CJ. Having a hard time choosing pitchers a little bit later in the drafts, rounds 13 through 21. Who are the pitchers you will be targeting? So I thought this was kind of a sleepery question, and I actually thought in the draft that we just did, there were great pitchers available in rounds 13 through 21. That's a pretty big range, though.
Yeah, and some pretty good pitchers who went undrafted. So at least for me, there's a clear strategy here, and getting your first two or three pitchers fairly early, and then you can really wait because I think there's such I can't think of the word now. Parity, that's the word. I think there's a lot of parity after the top 30 or so.
But it's there is parity in that there's, you know, 31 through 85, you know, could go any which way.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a clear step behind the 30. 30s.
Right.
So
that's what I'm saying.
Is
you get those guys early because they're hard. It's going to be hard to replace that reliability in that production.
Yeah. I don't know. I might want more than two. But I get what you're saying, that, you know, drafting somebody in the 30 to 40 range, which for me, if I can pull it up here real quick. Yeah, the 30 to 40 range for me would be like, I don't know. Gio Gonzalez, yeah. Lance Lynn, Jared Weaver, and it's maybe not going to be that much lower than like Derek Holland, Homer Bailey, Matt Cain, Jake Odorizzi. I think that makes sense.
Yeah, a lot of those guys you mentioned went pretty late.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, here are some guys that I had in my queue. I ended up with some of them, maybe two. Maybe just one, I'm not sure. Odorizzi, Yordano Ventura, Cingrani, Mike Fiers, Justin Verlander.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like those names. Marcus Stroman was another one I kept in the queue for a pretty long time. Jose Fernandez, based on the couple of mocks we've done so far, you could definitely wait on him, and obviously there's huge risk there, but you know, there's the possibility he gives you 4 months of really great production, then you're not going to have to invest much to you know, take a risk on that.
Yeah, I talked last podcast about how I am excited. I think I can use that word to draft Verlander where he's going this year. And another guy who I think I got him in round 15 of this draft, Garrett Richards.
Yeah.
Just because he's going to miss the first month or so recovering from a knee injury, so not even anything arm related.
And he may not miss that month.
Yeah, he may not even miss that much time. And he was an ace before he got hurt last year for a good, 4.5 months?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that seems like great value for somebody who could end up performing like a top 30 starting pitcher when he is back.
What about some guys, let's talk deeper here. Let's just say people are taking pitchers a lot earlier than we do, which is actually going to happen.
Well, in a head-to-head league, we would go deeper into the starting pitcher pool than we
did. Yeah, so let's go outside like the top 70 or 80 and just talk about some like kind of flyers at the pitcher, some deep sleepers at the starting pitcher position. Who you got?
Well, I don't know. Does Tony Cingrani count? Probably not. That's still a little too high. Going a little deeper than that, Jesse Hahn.
Sure.
The way he pitched for San Diego last year and staying in a pitcher's park now with Oakland. I like Brandon McCarthy started using the cutter when he went to the Yankees and got back to being like the McCarthy we saw before he went joined the Diamondbacks. Jimmy Nelson, I know you took him in this draft, Al.
Yep.
You know, minor league numbers just absurd at for the PCL, keeps the ball on the ground and still is able to miss bats. So could see the potential for him to make a big impact.
Yeah, that was the first name I was going to toss out there. Shane Green.
Stole it.
Yep. Shane Green's another one. I think he went undrafted in this mock we just did. But, you know, I could have seen taking him the last round or two. He's kind of on that fringe, but I think he's got some great potential. Carlos Martinez could be a big breakout guy this
year. Yeah, I like him for SPARP leagues, especially.
Yeah.
Start at relief pitcher. Andrew Heaney.
Sure.
Pretty much has a spot in the Angels rotation.
Oh, man.
This was one of the top pitching prospects last year.
There are just so many pitchers.
Yeah.
I don't mean to cut you off. I want to move on just a little bit here because, you know, we'll talk a lot more about a lot more starting pitchers later on during the spring. Email of the day number two is from Eric, and he says, when you draft, do you link a stat to a position like second base and steals or something like that? Or do you just look for a player that does that stat?
Yeah, I just look for a player who does that stat. It does work out that way sometimes, just because for me, you know, I'll wait a few rounds to kind of, because I'll just draft for best overall value early on, which, by the way, is probably why I won't be taking Billy Hamilton in many drafts. But
why is that? Yep. Explain that.
Because I'm not really looking to.
Because you're crazy. Because you don't want to win.
No,
he's not looking to fill specific needs in categories.
Right. No, I actually do want to win. So it is a means to that. Yeah, trying to get just the best overall value. And, you know, not to say that Hamilton isn't going to be very valuable. I think he will be. But the point, I'm going off on a tangent. The point I'm trying to make here is that it's, you know, maybe 6-7 rounds into the draft where I really start looking to fill specific needs. And at that point, you know, I might be good at outfield for a while. I might be good at the infield corner. So it often does work out that way, particularly middle infield. I wait. Uh-huh. And, you know, those are some good positions to get some steals.
Well, just look at the player pool, too. I mean, it's pretty much always outfielders and middle infielders that provide steals. You'll occasionally have, like, a Sean Figgins type at a corner infield spot. But the thing is, you got to make up for the power you would normally get at third base if you pass on that.
Yes, that's a good point.
Somewhere else.
And since I did draft Billy Hamilton, outfield is obviously a great source of power. So I also drafted Jay Bruce. I kind of felt like I had to compensate. I do feel like with first base and outfield, you got to have some power at those positions.
Right.
Or else you're not going to win the home run RBI categories.
I mean, unless you get like an Ian Desmond as one of your middle infielders, somebody like that, or like Evan Gattis at catcher. Yeah, you do need to. If you go light on power at a traditional power position, then you got to make it up somewhere else.
Okay, let's do injuries, news, and notes. Only got a couple things here. Atlanta signed Cuban outfielder Dion Toscano. Maybe that's how we pronounce it. Dion? Probably Dion.
I like Dion.
D-I-A-N.
Kind of an Atlanta, you know, roots thing going on there.
The Falcons signed him, too. 4 years, $6 million. And the White Sox signed Gordon Beckham, and they DFA'd Dion Vicedo. Not Dion Vicedo. So do we care about either of these moves here?
I mean, well, I'll admit I don't know anything about Toscano. So I probably
I looked him up a little beforehand.
All right, well, tell us about
it. Doesn't seem to have any power. Doesn't seem to have any speed. Makes a lot of contact. Just because they have Zuelo Almonte as their designated starter in left field now, I could see Toscano getting a lot of playing time. Certainly not. You know, they're not giving him the job or anything, but it could happen that way. But I don't see him making a big fantasy impact.
Okay, and the White Sox moves, I think, are interesting, not really for the moves themselves, but kind of the domino effect. Vicedo wasn't going to get every day at bats there had he hung around. So this gives him an opportunity maybe to catch on somewhere else where he can play more regularly. And I think there's some value in his bat power-wise. Beckham is probably going to fill a utility role for the White Sox, and I think that's really good news because you talk about steel sources. Micah Johnson, I think, has a pretty decent job now, decent chance to get the second base job. So there's some intrigue there.
Good stuff. Let's dive into your sleepers. Early sleepers for 2015. Al's got six. Scott has six. We'll alternate. And Al, and you actually had more than that. I just picked six from each of you. Al's got Michael Morse, now a Marlins outfielder, who's going to be 33 years old this year. And he was really good. First 59 games of last season, he batted .286. He slugged .577. In fact, he was one of the fantasy all-stars. And then he was terrible. So what do we expect from Morse this year, Al?
Well, you know, that's a nice little microcosm of maybe what we could expect, which wouldn't explain why he's one of my sleepers. That start that he had with the Giants, I just found really encouraging because I remember a year ago we had a lot of doubts about him being able to hit for power at AT&T Park, which I almost called Pac Bell. And he clearly proved that he could master that venue, and he could probably master any venue, and that's important for the move to Marlins Park. So he's just got to stay healthy. I think that's the key. That's always been difficult for him over most of his career. But I think on the per-game basis, he's going to be just fine. And the fact that the Marlins have upgraded their lineup, I think he'll have enough protection, and I think it could be a big year.
Michael Morse or Marlon Byrd?
Yeah, Morse for me.
I go Byrd. I'm not as high on Morse just because I've had my heart broken enough times. Just always seems to have some kind of physical issue going on.
Michael Morse or Steve Pierce?
I'm going Pierce definitely there. Big gap for me.
Yeah, it's very close for me. I'm going to go with the gut here and say Morse and sort of nervously go and check my rankings because I think it's very close.
All right, Scott's sleepers. We'll start with Yasmani Grandal, who is now the Dodgers catcher. Mm-hmm. In 128 games last season with the Padres, he did belt 15 home runs, but Grandal hit just .225. And Scott, you just hoping getting out of that park is going to be better for him or what?
Well, that's certainly part of it. He's, like many Padres players, he hit better on the road during his time there. But you'll remember last year he was coming back from ACL surgery. The playing time was kind of weird at the beginning of the season because they didn't trust the knee was completely healthy. Obviously, it got healthier over time. They let him catch more ended the season on a high note. Last 106 at-bats, 283, 5 home runs, and 883 OPS. And he had like half of his walks during that stretch, too. And the good times for Grandal, which have been, you know, he had a 50-game suspension in there, and then obviously the ACL injury, so hasn't had a very clean start to his career, no pun intended. when he has performed well,
clever,
he's got on base at a high rate. So it was nice to see him finish like that. And the other thing is just, look, Andrew Friedman was brilliant in Tampa Bay. He trades Matt Kemp primarily for Yasmani Grandal. So what does that tell you?
Well, is Grandal the clear-cut starter there?
Well, they do still have A.J. Ellis, and I think Don Mattingly's talked about, you know, not wanting to completely bury him on the bench. But the disparity between what they can do offensively is like night and day. So I don't think if it is an issue, it's not going to be an issue for long.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know the intention is that Grandal will be the primary catcher. Yeah, it's just a question of how that balance is going to be struck.
Grandal or Zunino?
Grandal. Grandal's my number 13 catcher, so... You know, head-to-head points leagues, you just miss drafting him, but otherwise, I'm high on him.
Yeah, I've got Zunino ranked a little bit higher, but that's pretty close.
Back to an Al sleeper. Actually, this is a shared Scott Al sleeper.
Yeah.
But I put it in the Al category.
Well,
Marcus...
based on where Al just drafted him, yeah, he...
Oh.
He gets the crown for some
reason. Oh, yeah, okay.
And when was that? So this is Marcus Semien, who's 24 years old, and we didn't see it in the numbers last year necessarily, but he had a pretty good... September. So where'd you draft Semien in this roto draft we just did?
I'm going to have to control F that because I don't remember top of mind.
Control F is such a great function, isn't it?
Yeah, round 13.
I don't know how I survived before control.
Yeah, I don't either. Round 13?
Yes.
So Semien now with the A's, what's his playing time status and what do you expect from him?
Well, it's changed, it seems like, about 17 times during the offseason with all the trades that they made. But as of now, it looks like he's got that shortstop job all to himself again. So I imagine that's how it will be on opening day. And I'm excited for him to get a shot at regular play because, like you said, down the stretch, he did start to live up to his potential with the White Sox. And I think with a more extended opportunity, you're going to see more of what he showed you in the minors, which was a really good power and speed combination with a pretty good batting average on top of it.
And high on base percentage,
yep.
Which is really, that's the part that's translated least to the majors so far. I feel like my sleeper list, and this is kind of an oddity for me, at least this list of sleepers, and these were just basically top of mind sleepers when you asked us to send in a few. Mine go a little deeper than usual in the sense that not all of them are guys I plan on drafting in standard mixed leagues. And that included Semien for me. And then you go and draft him like midway through this mixed league draft. So it's like, oh, okay, I guess I'm not getting Semien this year. Maybe the AL only auction or something.
Well, it's how it played out. I wanted Colton Wong in the worst way
in
this draft. And Dave Richards stole him out from under me. So basically the strategy was wait on Wong. And then when Wong went earlier than I thought, Semien was the backup plan.
And hey, if Semien gets a lot of hype throughout the rest of the... you know, pre-spring period, and then in spring training, I'll have to move him up. But right now, I feel like there's enough second baseman and third baseman that I feel like are just automatic draft picks in a mixed league that he's just kind of pushed out of that picture until he actually does something in the majors. But I do like him and see how he could be an impact player in fantasy this year.
Yeah, it's all about the position because those options at past the top 10 are not at all exciting. And Semien is one of the few upside guys that you could get in that neighborhood.
It's all about the base, Al. You know that.
That's right.
Yeah. Do you know that reference?
Not at all.
Come on, Al Melchior.
I know it.
No, I don't.
Really?
I'm the odd man out here.
Music reference?
Educate me.
All about that bass, no treble? You don't know that?
Nope.
I'm all about that bass. About that bass.
No treble.
You don't know that?
Come on, Al.
Nope.
It's been
Music Appreciation with Al Melchior. Next up, we've got Jake Odorizia, Scott White sleeper. Last year, Odorizia 11-13, 4.13 ERA, over strikeout per inning, 1.28 whip, Scott.
Whip. Cool whip.
Cool whip.
Yeah, Odorizzi. And you know what? If you just isolate that to his last 19 starts, it's a 1.15 whip and a 3.51 ERA. So... yeah, the 3.51 ERA isn't great, but throws strikes, gets a lot of strikeouts, obviously, more than a strikeout per inning. That's the main reason I like him, of course. Does give up home runs. That's kind of the black eye for him, and the reason why you see the disparity there between the ERA and the whip. But I think because he's a bat misser who generally stays... it doesn't award free passes, generally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
He's not like a control artist, but he's not a like poor control guy either. The point I'm getting
right. Yes, go ahead.
He can survive giving up a lot of home runs, I think, kind of the way James Shields has in his career. So I'm not holding that ERA against him, at least not at this stage of the career. I think for as late as you can get him, the strikeout rate is what you really need to key in on.
Odorizzi or Ventura?
Ventura. Odorizzi. Higher ceiling there.
I'm with Scott there.
Yeah. Odorizzi or Verlander?
Verlander.
Yep.
Also. Yeah.
Odorizzi or Homer Bailey?
Bailey.
Homer Bailey.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I like Odorizzi, but.
Odorizzi or Greinke?
Come on.
All right, now to A.J. Pollock. He was in my queue for a while, Al. I wanted him as my fifth outfielder. I didn't get him.
No,
but
I did.
You did?
Yeah, I got of the six sleepers that I'm going to talk about, I drafted four in this draft. It wasn't like a conscious thing either, like, oh, I got to get every guy on my sleeper list. It really just happened that way, so I guess I really do like these guys.
Good. Well, A.J. Pollock, 27 years old, entering his fourth season, and he had a 31-game stretch where he hit 367 with 5 home runs, 13 RBI, 21 runs, 8 steals, 11 doubles, 4 triples, and then he broke his hand and missed 3 months. And then he returned and was okay. Not a lot of power, but he batted 273. But that was after a 3-month layoff. So Pollock is exciting to me. What do you think about Pollock?
Well, you know, I mean, not exciting to me in the sense of that. I think that he's going to hit for a ton of power like he did during that 31-game stretch that you mentioned. I think the power is going to be okay, and it's going to be enough to complement what should be a healthy stolen base total. And I think he is legitimate as a 300 hitter. So I know he didn't come back that way after the injury, but I imagine that that's often going to happen after a hand injury like that. So I just think there's enough there in terms of those categories and him, you know, scoring runs that he's going to be. You said you want him as a fifth outfielder. I think he'd be fantastic. I think you could probably draft him in a lot of leagues as your fifth outfielder, but you really could slot him in, I think, as a fourth and be just fine.
You know who
is? Is he 2020 guy? That's what I wanted to
know.
No, I don't think so. But maybe 15-20.
But you know who he is?
No,
he is Shane Victorino. Maybe the steals won't be quite as high as Victorino in his best years, but the skill set as far as double-digit home runs, a lot of extra base hits, low strikeout rate.
Yeah, no, you nailed it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right, that's A.J. Pollock, Victorino. Drew Pomeranz, 10 starts last year for Pomeranz. He had a 2.58 ERA. He had 50 strikeouts and 52 and a third. He did walk 20 guys, though, in 52 and a third. And he pitched more than 5 innings only twice in those 10 starts. Both those starts are very good, though. Scott likes Drew Pomeranz as a sleeper this year.
Yeah, and I loved him all of last year, too. The problem was he just couldn't stay in the rotation, which is partly what led to those low innings totals. I wasn't equipped to go deep into games, but... should be all about starting this year with John Lester and Jeff Samardzija out of the picture. And more than anything, it's just the stuff and the upside. This was a guy who was the fifth overall pick the year he got drafted by the Indians, then got traded to the Rockies, and that just completely messed it up. Like, it has so many young pitchers. The walks became an issue. Obviously, home runs were an issue, but got a good breaking ball, strikeout pitch. The walks still weren't great last year, but because he was getting so much more out of his arsenal, they weren't a problem either. And I suspect as he gets more comfortable, the longer he's out of Coors Field, I just think with his upside, he's only going to get better and better.
All right, it's Drew Pomeranz. So then we move on to back to Al's sleepers here. We have Drew Hutchison. Hutchison had a 4.48 ERA last year. Kind of a baffling pitcher. Some really good starts, some really bad starts. Al, you've got him as a sleeper this year. When would you take Hutchison? Like, did he go in this draft we just did?
The final round.
Okay. And you think that's okay? Standard mixed league, 23 rounds?
I think that's appropriate. This is 23rd round, so I think anywhere in the 20s is fine. He was certainly one of a handful of pitchers that I had queued up starting probably around the 21st round or so. And yeah, because there's risk there. He was very inconsistent last year. That ERA is obviously not very encouraging, but there was improvement late. And I think I've mentioned it before, maybe more than once on this podcast, but there's a stat of his that I like and find very encouraging, which is that he was really hard to pull the ball against, particularly fly balls. And there are certain pitchers. Now, that's something that can vary a lot, but there are certain pitchers that are very consistent in terms of being difficult to pull the ball against. And these are pitchers, you know, like a Garrett Richards, like an Andrew Cashner, that don't give up very many home runs. So that's a skill that would really help Hutchison, given that he pitches in Toronto. And I think he'll miss enough bats on top of that he could see a huge drop in that ERA.
So I'd want to, before I go back to Scott, I hope you're not mad at me. I'm going to go to Al's. I'm going to go to Al. Good thing we're in different states.
Yeah, I'm going to punch your lights out.
Al's next guy is Kevin Gausman, and he was very good last year, 3.57 ERA. The strikeouts weren't great, 88 and 113 and a third. Only gave up 7 home runs. So, like, who do you like better, Hutchison or Gausman?
I got to see Gausman because I did take him. And it was around the 20th or 21st, I don't remember exactly which, when I had Hutchison still in the queue. So I just think that there is more upside there. I do trust Gausman's ability to keep the ball in the park a little bit more than Hutchison's. The strikeouts, I think, will come for him.
Scott, who do you like better, Hutchison or Gausman?
Gausman. And Gausman and Odorizzi, remember you were having a hard time earlier coming up with a pitcher that I would take Odorizzi over. Mm-hmm. I have Odorizzi one spot ahead of Gausman in my ranking, so I very easily could have called Gausman one of my own sleepers as well. You mentioned the strikeouts weren't that great. Definite improvement down the stretch for him in that area, which to me shows that he's learning to how to attack major league hitters better, how to sequence his pitches better, so that he gets the most out of them. So I think he's right there on the verge, with the way he finished the season, right on the verge of a breakthrough. I think it's a good pick.
Yeah, and he looked unhittable. I watched a lot of his starts down the stretch, and he really looked unhittable. But remember last year, there was that thing with like these second-year pitchers, or like second established season, excluding a guy who might have had like a really brief stint a few years ago. The second-year guys didn't do that well on the whole. Yeah. And I think one of the things we kind of looked at it and pointed at Arsenal, and maybe some of these guys had limited arsenals. And that's a bit of a concern of mine with Gausman. Although, if I remember correctly, I think he does throw two types of changeups. But I also think he's kind of like Chris Archer, that he doesn't really have that wide of an arsenal. And I don't know if that should concern us going into this year. But maybe you guys could look that up.
Well, it's funny you bring up Archer, because Archer was one of the pitchers who didn't disappoint last year.
He was
as advertised, I feel like.
I don't know. I think he got better, but I feel like he struggled at least at the start. He didn't do exactly what I was hoping. I thought he was going to be better than he was last year.
Yeah.
But I don't remember precisely.
I don't know if we can really apply any across-the-board lessons from last year's by and large disappointing sophomore pitching class. I mean, just not all of them were bad, but not all of them disappointed, really. Garrett Cole, his problem was injury. He took a step forward otherwise, so.
But it wasn't a huge step. You know, like he wasn't as good as like the eighth round draft pick people invested in, even when he was healthy.
Well, I think when he came back from the injury, he was like 10 strikeouts per nine. I think he.
What about before that, though? What about before the injury?
No, before that, he didn't live up to it. You're right.
The one guy who did for sure was Waka.
Yes. Yeah. Before his injury, he was basically an ace.
Do we have any more information about Kevin Gausman's arsenal?
Well, no, he's very fastball dependent. But you'd said, what, two different kinds of changeups?
Yeah, and I don't think it's on Brooks Baseball. I just remember hearing that on a broadcast.
Yeah, I'm looking at Fangraphs, and they've got two different sets of classifications. But, it looks like he doesn't throw a changeup very often. So
that maybe it was two different types.
And I had never heard that, so I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Well, does he throw a splitter?
Yes.
Then he has two different types of splitters, I think.
There you go.
I think that's what it was, so I apologize. But I don't know, I'm kind of interested there. He just looks so good down the stretch.
It is a very good fastball.
Yeah, it really is.
He should probably be throwing it a lot.
But I think Cingrani was an example of a guy who didn't have a huge arsenal and didn't do what we were hoping.
Right.
Moving on here. Scott, I'm going to lump these three outfielders together and tell me how you like them in which order. Steven Souza, who's now with Tampa Bay, came over in a three-team deal that involved Will Myers going to San Diego, and Souza came over from Washington to the Rays. Travis Snyder just got traded to the Orioles, and Ryan Rua of Texas.
That's the order I like them in, actually. And to go a step further in classifying them, Souza probably going to get drafted in all leagues, certainly all five outfielder leagues. Snyder right on the bubble. He didn't go in this standard roto draft, which means I passed on him as well. And then Rua's more of a deeper sleeper, probably only getting drafted in AL only leagues. Doesn't have a full-time job yet. But yeah, I like them all to, I like them all to have big seasons. Souza, I mean, his minor league numbers were just ridiculous. Hit like 350 last year with power and speed. And he was kind of old for the level, but he was supposed to be better than he was in the first place. So it seems like a late bloomer. And obviously Tampa Bay likes him, giving up Will Myers for him, among others. Snyder, I talked about yesterday. For the season, he actually had a higher OPS than Yelich and Calhoun. It's just he didn't become an everyday player until down the stretch. So seemed like there may have been a breakthrough in there for a guy who used to have, who had a huge pedigree in the beginning and then just, I don't know, struggled to find his form in the majors.
I would say about Rua, by the way, I think Scott's right that he's probably somebody you don't need to take even a five outfielder mixed league. He did just barely miss the cut for me for being a $1 outfielder, though, in those formats. And I didn't really have a crazy projection for him. I do have him with 490 at bats. He is the front runner to win the left field job. I've gone with a 276 average and 12 home runs, 66 RBI. I think that's very attainable for him. And that's enough to make him, you know, almost a $1 outfielder. So AL only for sure. But I think if you're in, say, a 14 team league, that's somebody who should be drafted late.
And I would say the upside's probably even higher than that. He strikes me, just looking at what he's done in the minors and what he did during his 105 at bat stretch with the Rangers, he strikes me as someone who could be this year's Cole Calhoun, a respectable batting average in between 15 and 20 home runs if he plays every day. So not an incredibly high ceiling, but certainly someone who could start for a fantasy team.
By the way, where did Cole Calhoun get drafted? Anybody remember? In the draft we just did, 12-team roto.
Yes, can you stall a little
five
longer?
Outfielders, 23 rounds, didn't draft the bench.
Round 10.
That seems kind of early for me. To me, I should say.
I felt like every position, or most positions, were pretty well stocked. I didn't feel like I was reaching for anything. And then the last few rounds, I felt like it was just awful players being drafted. You know, there were some like high upside pitchers in there, but there were a lot of guys. Like my last pick was Shane Victorino. Coco Crisp was a possibility. But they, boy, the hitters by the last couple rounds were just really, really weak.
Well, again, because what is it? It's high upside pitchers. People need to fill their middle infield slot, and people need to get their second catcher. So
yeah.
Some good pitchers, but yeah, the hitters are going to be the guys that you were avoiding for the first 22 rounds.
Speaking of second catcher, though, do you feel like there's such a drop off?
Yes.
That you should probably invest a little bit more in your second catcher.
And that's exactly what I did.
Yeah. I wanted to do it, but I just was focused on other things. After 15 for me, and it may be a little different for us because I know our rankings vary at that stage of the rankings. But for me, it's 15. Derek Norris is the last mixed league worthy catcher. And then it's just...
Yeah, then it's terrible.
It's garbage. I mean, it's players who we've relied on in the past, like Jared Saltalamacchia and Jason Castro, Kurt Suzuki, but none of them I really have any confidence in putting up respectable numbers this year.
Yeah, and I feel the same way. Yeah, like I said, the order's a little bit different, but yeah, pretty much it's you know, Derek Norris or bust. And yeah, this is the one thing I executed, I thought, really well and according to plan, which is I waited on Travis d'Arnaud, got him in the 11th round, the last pick in the 11th round, and then came back at the top of the 14th and got Wilson Ramos. And yeah, and I think Ramos is my number 13 catcher, if I remember correctly. So There's even a bit of a drop-off even before Derek Norris.
So do you guys consider Zunino to be one of those mixed league-worthy guys?
Yeah.
I don't. He's outside my 15, and I think he's going to be basically useless in points leagues.
Yeah, but I agree with that. Yeah. I agree with that. But in roto leagues, I remember him being one of the guys that was so much better in roto than he was in points.
He had a lot of home runs last year, but by the same token, he hit 199. And while I do think he has the upside to get better, you don't see it in the ratio. So I'm not really counting on much better than a 200 batting average this year.
I'm a little more optimistic. I was incorrect. I have Zunino 13th, Ramos 14th.
Okay.
So yeah, I would have been fine with Zunino there. And then it's Martin, Norris. I have Grandal next. I'd say Grandal for me is the last stop before Loserville.
All right, one more sleeper here. Al, I don't know if this is a deep sleeper for you, but Colorado starting pitcher. And as soon as I usually hear those two words, I just remove
it
from queue. Yeah. Tyler Matzek, yeah, he went 6-11 last year with a 4.05 ERA. He had a 1.39 whip. It's not very good.
Yeah, some good numbers there, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it's sort of in there for just the shock value, but not entirely. No, I wasn't even tempted to take Matzek in this 12-team roto mock, but in the 14-15 team, mixed leagues, he's definitely a late round guy that I'll be looking at. And the basis for this is how he finished last season. One of these guys that just had a dramatic improvement, but it wasn't completely out of nowhere because it was sort of like a slow rolling breakout that he had starting in AAA with a little bit of improvement in the in his control, a little bit stronger ground ball tendency, and then that carried over when he got called up. But then the last month and a half, he had I think it was a 190 ERA over the last, I think, seven starts. And again, that's not a big stretch, but he really backed up that performance with great control and really strong ground ball tendencies. So if he can pull that off in Colorado, I'll take the deep league flyer on him in something just a little deeper than 12-team league.
You know how many good pitchers the Rockies have had in their history?
Two, maybe.
Who's the second? Ubaldo Jimenez. That's
yeah. That's why I gave it.
I think we got to give Jorge De La Rosa some credit here.
Well, it's Chacin, actually. You mentioned this a couple days ago.
Chacin started his career
had a good season or two that were pretty good. If you go way back, I think Kevin Ritz was decent one year.
So we don't have to get. We're not giving.
Who's the guy? They had a pitcher, Freeman.
Marvin Freeman.
Marvin Freeman. Yeah. I couldn't. Yeah.
Not we're sure. Not giving De La Rosa any credit?
Who?
Jorge De La Rosa?
No.
Why?
He wins games. That's pretty much all I can say for him, though.
He's okay. A respectable pitcher for Colorado.
Respectable. Well, yeah, that respectable is great, I guess.
He would be a fifth starter for most teams, I feel like.
I agree, but I think what he's done in Colorado...
He survived it. He survived it better than most. Can I say that for
yes.
Him?
Yes.
I think Jeff Francis was pretty good that World Series year, right?
I don't think so.
No?
I could be mistaken. I feel like Jeff Francis was a gargantuan disappointment overall. And
all right, well, this,
maybe I'm
this...
forgetting one DCU.
Oh, Brett Anderson.
Oh.
What?
I mean, very briefly.
Yeah, very briefly.
What did he do last year?
He had a few good starts.
He had like a super low ERA, didn't he?
Yeah, in the twos, I think.
Jeff Francis won 17 games in 2007.
What was the ERA?
4.22 ERA, 1.38 WHIP, 6.9 strikeouts per nine.
Super.
It has different standard for pitchers back then, but other than the 17 wins, that's not impressing me.
I'll take that ERA in Colorado.
Aaron Cook, anybody?
Okay.
Hey, an All-Star team.
that's not the last we're going to talk about sleepers, but it is for now. Let's read some emails. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Chris in Iowa says, "Dear Winslow, Tackleberry, and Hightower." Another classic 80s comedy that Al Melchior has never seen. Yeah. Right?
No, I have seen it.
Oh, you have? Okay, yeah. Good. It's Police Academy. "What are your thoughts on the Rangers second base situation for this year and going forward? I have Odor at $1 in a 15-team Roto Keeper League, and I'm wondering if he'll play enough to warrant a roster spot or if Profar will pilfer at bats from him."
If this was grade the alliteration, that's an A.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I do think he'll return your dollar and then some. But yeah, I would worry a little bit about the playing time issue if Profar can, you know, get himself healthy and earn a trip back to the majors. It's a legitimate concern.
In the long run, but this year, they basically said Profar's going to start in the minors. So I have enough faith in Odor that he's going to he's not going to look back.
Here's an email from Taylor, 12-team points league, and the scoring is very different. So steals are 1 point. Strikeouts are minus a full point. Should my fifth and last keeper be Posey, Carlos Gomez, or Cole Hamels?
See, that format basically kills Carlos Gomez because one of his strengths is stealing bases. Okay, they're only worth half as much. And one of his weaknesses is strikeouts. Okay, they cost you twice as much. So if you're talking about a guy who strikes out 160 times a year, steals 30 bases... right there, that's, what is that, 80 plus?
How many steals we give him?
30-ish,
yeah.
So that's 15? 15 fantasy points.
So he's getting half the points for that, and he's getting twice the points for the strikeouts. So, what is that? Is that 110 points?
No, it's 95.
95? Okay, 95.
Well, you said 160 strikeouts, right?
Yeah, is that accurate?
He's for 147, so that's okay. It could be 160.
Okay, so maybe I'm on the side there. But the point is, he's losing a ton of points from what would be a standard format, and that's enough to, I think, drop him a good 20 spots in the outfield rankings. I think I'd go Posey here.
Just my gut, and maybe it is, just being very accustomed to a standard format would be to stick with Gomez because other outfielders will be, punished too, although maybe not to the same degree. I think it's pretty much a toss up, but I'd stick with Gomez.
Chuck in Florida, "Dear Reese, Shaw, and Root."
Nope.
Yeah, me either.
Who knows? Who
cares? Please rank these players for 2015 in an 8-team NL only league with 31 man rosters head to head. Dilson Herrera, Matt Clark, Andrew Lambeau, Michael Franco, and that's it. And Chuck in Florida. Dilson right. Herrera, Matt Clark, Andrew Lambeau, and Michael Franco.
Franco first and running away with it. And then I'd say Herrera, Lambeau, Clark.
I agree with the order. I have Herrera on about the same level as Franco. So I think they're about as close to being regulars in the majors. Franco a little bit ahead. And I honestly don't think the upside's that far apart either.
Vincent Kong from Toronto. Head-to-head 6x6 categories league, strikeout-to-walk ratio is the additional pitching category. So am I insane for thinking of keeping Phil Hughes over Teron, Cashner, Quintana, or Shoemaker?
Especially in that format, not crazy at all. And I think even in a standard format, he's not too far behind Tehran. In fact, I think I could look it up. I think there's a chance I actually have Hughes ahead of him.
Man, I really hope not. I don't get the. I think I talked to you about this last week. I don't get why people are down on Julio Teheran.
Yeah,
if they are down on him.
I got him 25th. I just don't consider that down.
Yeah, no, that's
true. How's the downer on Teheran here? He's holding the drop in strikeout rate against him, but it wasn't a dramatic strike drop, and he's been a strikeout pitcher before. So
I've got him between Greinke and Cole. I mean, I don't even see how that's down.
I mean, why do you have them so low? Who do you have high? I have them next to Greinke and Cole too, but it's 10 spots higher.
That whole tier, I just have something against them. See, I do have a few spots ahead of Teheran.
Oh, my gosh. Al, that's insane. You're insane.
No, it's not at all. Not at all. And this format's a no-brainer.
It's had 1 year where he was good. 1 year as a starter.
He was number two on this list.
He was a different pitcher last year in a better venue. He had the splits that suggested he'd be much better out of New York.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing I don't buy about last year.
No, he didn't have the splits every year in New York. He overachieved.
There's no way.
There's no way Phil Hughes overachieved
the rest of the year, because I'm convinced he's going to be just as good this year.
I think he's going to be maybe like a top 35 starting pitcher. I don't know. He's okay.
I mean,
so
look at.
Okay, I'll put him outside the top 30.
Okay, but I mean, you can grant me in this format. You know, this is the best pitcher last year.
But didn't he have like a historic walk to strikeout ratio?
Right, which means if he regresses from that, it's still going to be excellent.
Yeah,
and you could argue he had bad luck on balls in play. The FIP was much lower than the ERA. I think the BABIP was high against him. So just
yeah, it was.
I mean, even if you're assuming some regression in the strikeout to walk ratio, I think that evening out, the batted ball thing evening out, he improves overall.
Phil Hughes, everybody, Phil Hughes. And last question here is from Jack. And he says, hey, dude, Walter and Donnie. Thank you, Jack, for picking the most overrated movie of its decade. I have the first overall pick. Am I crazy to go Mike Trout, Billy Hamilton, and D. Gordon in the first three rounds to lock up steals and get a head start in runs?
Yes, that is crazy, because you could still get if you really wanted those three, Trout, Hamilton, and Gordon. You don't need your first three picks to do it. You could do like round 1, 5, and 7, and
maybe even later on Gordon.
Yeah, so that's just dumb. Sorry to say.
Yeah, it's crazier. It's crazier than Big Lebowski worship, which I think is pretty crazy and pretty prevalent. Big Lebowski is the Phil Hughes of film. Overrated.
The Phil Hughes of film.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. All right, guys.
Sorry,
thank you very
Jack,
much.
Not dumb. You're probably a genius, but this is not a smart move.
Big weekend plans? Anyone?
Not at all. But that's okay.
Super Bowl plans? Super Bowl pick?
I'm going to watch the Super Bowl. I'm going to watch the Seattle Supersonics win.
Uh-huh. Al?
Yeah, I'm also picking the Oklahoma City Thunder. And I'm going to Scott's house.
You're going to watch it, though, at least, right?
He's being informed of this right now.
You're going to stay up and watch it?
Yes, I will.
All right, good stuff. That's Al Melchior and Scott White. We'll be back next week with more podcasts. I'm Adam Azer. Thanks a lot, everybody.